It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, and we've got a great program lined up for you. This week, we're going to be having Mr. Gary Baker and Ed Rudell in studio with us, and also our Lady of the Social Networks, Emily Hay, is with us, along with her sweet little girl, Ainsley. We'll be introducing them and some very interesting people who are involved in social media throughout the city of Detroit. All that coming up on this first hour of the Internet Advisor, so please do stay tuned. Well, it's the start of something good here, Mr. Baker. Good to have you in studio.
Settling right in here, getting ready to do a great show, I hope.
Absolutely. And Ed Rudell, thank you so much for being around as well.
Always great to be here.
And we have a very special visitor to the studio that we're going to introduce in a little bit. She is the youngest guest, I think, Gary, in 16 years. Almost 7. This is the youngest guest.
I think so.
And I think she's going to set a record now.
She's a Google girl, too.
She's a Google girl. Yes. And if Ainsley... Ainsley is her name. She's 10-month-old. Emily, come on, step forward to the microphone here and just say hello.
How are you guys?
We're doing well. So good to see you here and Ainsley as well, folks. We will post pictures of this precious
beautiful little
doll.
Thanks
girl.
For having yes. us.
Oh, so glad. We saw you. You were in studio just before you had her.
Mm-hmm.
And then she arrived quickly.
Yes.
And you have been performing mommy duties as well as keeping up your company, hey there, social media.
Yes. If it's not the baby in my arms, it's the smartphone in my other.
Well, we're going to be talking about that. You have some guests you're going to have on with us. So we're going to be focusing on social media today. So thanks so much for being
you.
Here. Well, somebody else who's with us and is here on a regular basis is Mr. Mike Brennan. Mike, thanks so much. Good to have you here for MI Tech News.
Well, thanks very much, Foster. Always a pleasure.
And we've got some interesting headlines here. Well, the first one has caught my eye, and I guess I'm kind of disappointed, personal printing at least. Governor Snyder signed that bill that essentially cut Tesla out of doing direct sales in Michigan.
Yeah, but he also raised the issue that maybe it's time in the 2015 legislature for us to revisit the franchise laws. Just for the audience's sake, what it is Tesla wanted to sell direct to the public.
Right.
Obviously, all the franchise dealers got a monopoly on that. They didn't like that. So so this legislation tightens it up so they can't be tested in court. But he left open the door saying we should revisit this in 2015. Maybe it's time. Cause these laws were written 100 years ago.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Much has changed, right?
Oh,
well, you know, we do have an awful lot of campaign giving from the from the auto dealers. But also, this was passed with one dissenting vote in the House, zero dissenting votes in the Senate. You know, it was going to be really hard for any governor to veto something like that with such overwhelming support from the legislature.
But it also sounds like, as Mike is saying, that this in 2015 with a new legislature, and if he's governor, that there'll be a very strong push to update this particular model for sales. Okay, another headline you had there on MI Tech News this week was that Michigan Tech is using advanced technology to study the earth underneath our roads.
Yeah, you know, we've got our roads falling apart, our bridges falling apart, but below all that is the ground. And so what they're doing is a study on what can be done to better strengthen the ground underneath our roads. I mean, that's part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of other issues as well. We don't fix our roads as much as we should. But certainly you got that's the very foundation, and so they're going right to the foundation and take a look at that, and they'll come up with these results, and hopefully it'll help us have better highways in the future.
Absolutely. So this is this is Michigan Tech, which is up in Houghton.
Way up north, yeah, the Upers, right. Up there in Houghton. So
great
can
science
they even
center.
Find the ground? I guess maybe 1 month out of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it's 11 months of snow up there.
Oh, my. I have a friend who lives just north of there, as a matter of fact, on the Keweenaw Peninsula. Gary, you have family up there Bootjack, yep. I think it is, and not too far from there, Lake Linden. And she had snow in late May, I think, maybe early June. It was a really rough winter up there. But one of the problems, you said, is the freeze-thaw cycle for us. And being able to see the ground underneath will be a very important thing. I want to step on to one other item here before we talk about how to get hold of MI Tech News, and that is the Hacker Fellows are offering developers dollars to work at Michigan startups. Tell me about that.
Well, if you have a computer science, if you're graduating, if you're a senior from college, and you're graduating with a computer science degree or other related sorts of degrees, Grand Circus, in partnership with Invest Detroit, will give you a fellowship where you can work. You can start your own company. You can work with startups, but the fellowship is worth $60,000 a year. You know, that's nothing to sneeze at. And they'll plug you in at Grand Circus, where all those other talented young entrepreneurs are, who may or may not have those computer skills that these fellows, men and women, will have coming out of college. So,
you know, we've had Damien from Grand Circus on here. What a great addition to the fabric, entrepreneurial fabric of downtown Detroit. Grand Circus has just been wonderful in so many different ways. So,
well, then we have Bamboo. That's our friend Amanda Luan. She has Bamboo, and there's five or six others. I mean, it's amazing what's happened in downtown Detroit. It's really become a very exciting place for young entrepreneurs, young people to get together to start businesses.
By the way, Dave Anderson from Bamboo is going to be our guest a little later on in the program.
So I don't get anything extra for that plug.
No, yeah.
By the way, if you're enjoying these headlines that Mike has, and there's so much, it goes everything from the statewide, nationwide, and talks about technology, entrepreneurship. If you're an entrepreneur, places for you to get hold of money and to network with other entrepreneurs. It's very simple. All you do is go to internetadvisor.net, scroll down the page, and then click on that subscribe button. And free for nothing, you get not only these headlines, but many more, and all sorts of other resources, audio resources, like, for instance, the podcast of our program, or these MI Tech News headlines that we give every week. So you've got all sorts of things there, including some books occasionally that you'll have them there as well. So lots of resources for free, and all it takes is you're going to internetadvisor.net and clicking on that subscribe now button, and free for nothing, you get these and many other headlines. Mike, thanks so much for being with us again, and thanks so much for doing this with MI Tech News.
Thanks, guys.
All right, take care. Mike. Mr. Mike Brennan. And again, that's MI Tech News, and you will see all that there is if you go to mitechnews.com. But it's free for you. Hey, coming up in just a minute, we are going to get socially connected. Become socially correct, I guess, for the first time in a long time, but this rude bunch. Emily Hay is in studio along with Ainsley. You'll have to forgive us. We're all, you know, putting our cameras away. There is just the cutest little girl in studio with us. That's Ainsley, who is Emily Hay's daughter. And what a sweetie she is. Emily, so good to have you back with us again.
Thanks so much. I missed you guys. I haven't seen you in person for a while.
It's great to have you back.
Yeah, you've been on mommy duty. And Ainsley is now 6 months old, and she is absolutely fascinated with your headset. Mommy, you're wearing a new hat.
Yes, what is this?
Keeps your ears warm.
But Gary, we were thinking that this may be the start of a new record, because Lauren, your daughter, was 5 years
old.
She was five when she first came. So Ainsley has broken the record now at being 6 months old.
Well, Lauren probably pulled her weight a little bit better at 5 years old than 6 month old.
She was doing her own website at that time.
She did have a few sentences she strung together, but so that's a little bit into Ainsley's future.
A little
future
bit before. Well, we're glad to have you back, and I'm in some ways I know. By the way, Emily is the CEO and founder of Hey There Social Media. And we have links to that, of course, on our homepage. And just quickly, what do you do with Hey There Social Media for people who may not be familiar with it?
Sure. We offer social media marketing services primarily for small business owners. So we definitely have a strong presence here in Southeast Michigan, but we have clients all over the country.
Okay, excellent. And in particular, is an organization founded by women, I know that you have a real heart for helping women with small business in particular as well.
Absolutely. In fact, our whole team is made up of social media savvy women that we all work from home. And a lot of our clients, again, as I say, small business owners, businesses that need blog posts written and YouTube videos done. And generally, they want to create that content to reach a female buyer. So it all works out.
That works out wonderfully. So in essence, you provide the expertise in the area of social media for small businesses so they don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Right. A lot of them just don't know where to start. You know, they exactly. learn what a blog is and they hear about, especially now, Facebook ads and paid promoted tweet campaigns on Twitter.
Yeah.
And they just don't know where to start.
Well, beyond just the context, how you do something, it's you have to have the right content. And that's part of it too, which is, you know, how and what to say and what to write in each of the different media to really reach people. Because there's some things, you know, it's a little bit like etiquette, email etiquette we've talked a lot about here. There's a big, you know, big problem with not understanding the etiquette of some of these social media sites, right?
Thanks, Garrett. You're exactly right. And you mentioned content, creating content. You know, what does that mean? Whether it's a written blog post or infographics, mm-hmm. You know, maybe you post an infographic for your prospective customers mm-hmm. to learn about your service.
Right.
And like you said, whether it's a video or pictures now from Instagram and even video on Instagram as well, it's just a lot of ways for people to learn.
By the way, if you hear some cooing in the background, it's Uncle Ed who is doing some babysitting. You know, it's fascinating, Emily, on a recent episode of Blue Bloods on TV, they focused on this issue of social media. And one of the characters, a young woman, had tweeted something that was not very complimentary mm-hmm. about one of her teachers. And it affected her being able to get into one of the universities that she was, Rutgers happened to be the university. And so the universities are looking at what people are posting as well.
Definitely.
And so, I mean, you really knew what you said, Gary, is so
That's
important.
Right.
You need to be aware of what's good and not good to say in the context of some of these things, because you could step on a landmine or create a real mess, which is what happened in this particular instance.
And even just in business, just not reaching, you know, a message
not being
that
effective.
Just doesn't reach the audience intended, right? It's not effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you mentioned, just to talk about, you know, the teens and the tweens, and we're hearing now even schools are concerned, well, do we need social media policies? Should our teachers be able to follow students? Should the students follow the teachers?
Yeah.
What if there's a coach that wants to have a separate Twitter handle? He's affiliated with the school, but wants to have a handle for his particular sport. Should he be allowed to have his own handle, or should he follow a guideline?
It's, oh boy.
Yeah. So it's not just businesses that
need
a strategy in place. And you know, you mentioned students in particular and schools follow.
Yeah. And one of the other factors of it was that somebody was secretly videotaped making some pretty, it was one of the characters of the former police commissioner in New York, was making some pretty rough comments about what he did in his day to deal with the bad guys. And somebody surreptitiously was taking a video of that, posted that, and it became a huge political event. And that's the kind of thing that can happen, is that suddenly what you think was a private conversation, once it hits the internet, boom, it has a reality of its own. It
exactly.
has a life of its own at that point.
You can delete a tweet, but once it's retweeted or screen shared, it's, I mean,
I try to tell,
you know, we're talking to, sometimes talking to teenagers, and they think Snapchat, you know, you set it up for 10 seconds and then it goes away. Well, guess what? There's programs out there now. It doesn't go away.
No, it never
right?
did.
Yeah, and even Snapchat is one that, you know, not to say which networks you should and shouldn't use, but that one just seems to have a lot of trouble all around.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yes. Anybody who offers that kind of panacea cure. Well, what are some of the things that are going on in the social media world? Let's talk in a positive vein, or some of the things that are right now popping up, like with Facebook.
Sure. Well, one of the things that a lot of folks, if they use Facebook business pages, there's always some confusion. We get questions around, am I posting as myself or am I posting as the business?
That's a good question. Yeah, I have that question too.
And the answer is kind of yes, right?
Yeah, yes.
Yes to both.
If you're an admin on a Facebook business page, you will default to posting as the page.
Yes.
However,
yes.
at the top now, you know, Facebook, they've had for some time actually, whether you're using Facebook as the business or as, you know, Emily Hay or
profile. Right.
And so they released that they're making that even clearer. It's even easier to
toggle
between the two.
It is now, yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I see that
I had trouble with Twitter. In fact, Foster, you and I would mix up our tweets sometimes early on. Now, it doesn't happen anymore, but we did, where I would tweet something from my own personal Twitter account and then from the Internet Advisor, and then Foster would it would show up kind of as Foster's post because he was also capable of posting on the Internet Advisor tweet. So it was kind of funny. And so he would post something, and I would go, did I say that? I didn't say that. Wait a minute. I didn't say that.
Yes. Hold it.
Toggling between the two.
Don't put really, words in my mouth.
It's really smart. I'm glad somebody posted that under my name. But.
Well, what is Facebook's new rooms that I'm seeing? It looks to me almost like Google Plus's circles, is it?
Well, that's what we were looking at it, reading about it a little bit. It doesn't sound like a page, and it certainly isn't just another group. It is based around bringing people together that like a common place. So I'm wondering if it's, you know,
a geographic place.
Sure.
And
leading, maybe it could lead to some specific advertising.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think if it, right now it just says that users can control their Facebook rooms as they want. Kind of vague, you know, what does this mean? But it is an app. It's a separate app.
Oh, it's a separate app now.
Yeah, so I don't know if you guys, when you use Facebook on your phone, when you go over to Messenger, a separate app open. Yeah. So that's at least what I picture. I don't know for sure.
I find that crazy confusing still, to be honest with you. Because I don't necessarily always see Messenger, but I will see, for instance, on my Facebook page, I see in the top of those three icons, I'll see like the middle one. Oh, I've got a message there from somebody. Sometimes it's very confusing about using that separate app versus just being in Facebook and seeing a message that's there.
Yeah, especially from your phone.
Now, the other thing I saw, and Emily, I don't know if you've seen this, I just saw this today, that there is a software out there, apparently, that you can pre-tweet. In other words, before the tweet goes out, you have a chance to take a look at it and say, hold it, do I really want to say that? Have you heard about that?
It's a special software?
Apparently it's a special software. I'm sorry, I don't have it right at hand, but I saw that just before we came on, and I thought, now that's interesting.
Well, that's kind of like our three-second delay here, you know. That gives us a chance to go, did I really want to say that?
That's exactly
it. You know, and I seem to remember that there used to be an app out there that you would do. It's like the drunk man's app. So it would give you 60 seconds.
Google Glasses, I think, wasn't it?
See, so like, that was really stupid. Maybe I want to recall that.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you give someone an extra second to think about a tweet before it goes out there is probably a good thing.
Speaking of tweets, I know that you have been involved in like tweet brigades around events. Tell me about those.
Sure. So we have tweet teams, like street teams. So anytime you want people to go live, experience something, and then spread the word to their Twitter followers, it works out to be a tweet team.
I love it. That's part of what's one of the services that's available through Emily Hayes, Hey There Social Media. Hey, folks, we're going to hang on because in just a moment, we've got some folks to be talking with. Haj Fleming's the first one coming up. We're talking about his brand camp. All that coming up. Well, this week we're focusing on social media and people who are using it in very creative ways. Of course, our own Emily Hay, who is our expert in that field, is here with her sweet little daughter, Ainsley, who is chewing on a microphone cable. Teething, as it were. We have a guest here, though, who is somebody that who is using, I think, media in particular in some very creative ways. Somebody that I met at a Microsoft event, not too long ago. His name is Haj Flemings. Haj, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hello. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, and thank you for joining us here.
Yeah, thanks, Haj.
Thank you. I'm excited to be on today.
I'm delighted to have you with us. You recently concluded something called Brand Camp University. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Yeah, so the Brand Camp Conference Series, Brand Camp Summit, we called it this year, is an annual event that we do in New York, we do it in Boston, and we had a recent one in Detroit on October 21st. So really what it is that it is this collision of creatives, investors, startups, entrepreneurs, and professionals that come together to talk about brand, entrepreneurship, and technology.
What is the significance of brand? I think of, you know, Coca-Cola immediately, or Apple, or some of the big ones like that. What's the significance of a brand to an entrepreneur, let's say, who's just starting a business or maybe has a small business?
All right, well, that's a great question. And really, everything starts with the story. And if you think about iconic brands, we like to use Coca-Cola as an example. And if you think about the simplicity of what they've built a multi-billion-dollar empire with. They built it with a trademark, a color, and a recipe. You know, and if you think about those ingredients for an entrepreneur, and think about the basic thing, most of us start out with little to no budget. And how do you get people to emotionally connect to the idea that you have? Brands, at the end of the day, when you think about it, they want to make an emotional connection with their clients or with their end customer.
What are some of the mistakes that people make in that sense when they're starting out with a business and, you know, trying to establish a brand?
I think lots of times what happens is that the entrepreneur is heads down working on the idea, and they don't think about all the things that go into making sure that they own that they own the brand. There's a conversation that needs to be owned online. There's digital real estate that needs to be owned. There's a legal aspect in terms of owning the legal entity of it. So there's a lot of moving parts that go along with the brand. And lots of times we get so caught up to trying to put all these features and add all these things to it. If we could just take a step back and make sure that once we get out there, that we have all the basics in place first.
Well, we're talking with Haj Flemings, by the way, who is a digital brand specialist and a strategist, and who has recently had a brand summit here in the Detroit area. I also had one in New York and Boston. You serve as like a consultant to businesses then?
So some of my clients include Pfizer, Pitney Bowes, who've done work with the Detroit Lions. There's a variety of different ways that we engage. Like with the Lions, we're working with, you know, with some of the athletes and talking with them in terms of from a digital strategy standpoint. When you think about the whole Ray Rice situation,
His
issue was not a legal issue in terms of him not playing at this point in time. When you think about the world today, the court of public opinion takes on a world in and of itself,
and so
you can lose opportunity just because it's not managed. Now, you need to do the right thing and have strong character, but then there's still things that need to be done to manage situations because we will all have a crisis that we'll go through at some point in time.
So learning to handle the public face of your business is just as important as whatever widget you happen to be creating then.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Because at the end of the day, nobody's perfect. Mm-hmm. I'm not perfect. Nobody on this phone or anyone listening is perfect. And no one is expecting anybody to be perfect. But there are ways to manage situations. And at the end of the day, making sure that you have the right things in place. And when something happens, how do you address it? There's a time frame, you know, when comments need to be made, you know, you need to take responsibility for certain stuff. There's a legal side of what you can say or should say or shouldn't say at certain points in time. So all these things play into, because at the end of the day, you could have millions of dollars at stake and if it's not handled appropriately, it's very hard to unring the bell.
Well, those are some great points, Haj. And speaking of a priceless brand here in Detroit, you yourself, you know, you're so involved and we're so lucky to have you in the area. I always like to know, you're taking the temperature in the tech community here in Detroit all the time. Do you have any updates, anything to share on just how things are moving along?
Something that I think of, when I look at what's happening downtown, I'm really excited to see the density, to see the things that are taking place. You know, in terms of the buildings that are not being occupied, the M1 rail, which I think is cool. But I think I think an opportunity that I hope that I start to see is that I see a lot of activity in the Midtown area, but there's a lot of other communities and neighborhoods within Detroit that I think for us to really get to the point of critical mass and being where we want to be from a tech hub standpoint is that it's going to have to filter to some of these other neighborhoods because I don't think we're going to be a replica of Silicon Valley, a replica of New York, or some of these other tech hubs. So that's where I see the opportunity, especially with all the great assets in terms of from a diversity standpoint. There's a lot of women doing incredible things here. And so I think Detroit proper and Detroit as a region has a really interesting opportunity to be able to show what this next generation tech hub or tech space could look like.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and there are great stories. Shinola comes to mind, right? Mm-hmm. When Shinola was getting started up again, they decided to move to Detroit
right.
because they did a survey and found that they could charge a premium for their manufactured products, their watches, their bikes, and now some other things that may be coming out, if they were tied to the city of Detroit, that, you know, that made in Detroit feel, that rough and tumble.
Yeah,
But certainly the manufacturing brand of Detroit, Raj, I'd be interested in your feedback on that. And what do you think? Does it help certain brands to be here in Detroit?
Yes, it does. And I think that there's an opportunity because if you think about it, there's a lot of people that want a part of Detroit, but might not necessarily want to move back here, right? So so maybe they want to be able to buy something so they can say that they have a part of the Midwest or a part of Detroit. And I've talked to a friend of mine who sells skateboards, and they're produced in the UP. They're produced
in
Upper Peninsula.
Huh.
Yeah. And we're talking because he has a distribution channel out on the West Coast, and he says, "Hi, there's such a market for people who want to buy Detroit, made in Detroit products. It's something about the grittiness,
yeah,
the DNA of who we are, that I think that Shinola could be just a tipping point of other manufactured type product and opportunities.
Certainly, when we see Chrysler coming out with the imported from Detroit logo,
yes,
and byline, that certainly they certainly bought in.
I like the idea you're saying that we're not going to imitate Silicon Valley here in Detroit. It's got to come up with a different kind of reality. What are some of the things you think we need to? You mentioned pulling other neighborhoods together, other than just Midtown.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of those things?
And again, when I make that statement, I know some of you will come back and try to beat me up because there's already work being done in these other neighborhoods. So I recognize that there is work being done. We're just saying that there's a greater opportunity to be able to kind of continue that. Mm-hmm. The other piece that I think is that if you look at, we already have a lot of businesses that are doing good stuff, but I think the layer of technology in terms of helping businesses that are in this area leverage technology in a greater way, I think there's a great opportunity there. So every company's not going to be a mobile app, okay? And that's just the reality of it because of the types of entrepreneurs and types of companies that already live and exist here today. And so I think that if we're able to then help these companies understand how to embrace technology and connect with customers, build community with a lot of the tools that are available, I think you'll see the businesses locally start to grow. What has happened is that the middle class was built here, right? So, so I think we got somewhat complacent where when we could get a great job, $700,000 with low education.
Yes.
So now I think some people were displaced. So I think for now you're starting to see people who are entrepreneurs, whether it's forced or accidental, now start to do what's in their heart. But we now need to kind of teach them how to operate in this new world.
Haj Fleming is our guest here. He's a digital brand specialist. Tell me something. Do you, Gary mentioned Shinola as one of the companies that has kind of blossomed here in Detroit. Who are the other, would you say, poster children of kind of the new Detroit?
Shinola obviously stands our head and shoulders above, but I think you can look at other, whether they're social good kind of companies that have garnered a strong name in Detroit. Detroit Super does some good stuff. They've been recognized by the White House.
We've run out of time here right now. Okay. We'll have to refer people back to your website, but thanks so much for being with us. We've been talking today on this first hour of the Internet Advisor about social media. Emily Hay with us in studio from Hey There Social Media. She's our expert in this field. And we've been talking about Haj Fleming, about brand awareness, and this tech hub that is being created in Detroit right now. Very important place. Well, it's got to have some place to be. I mean, physically, some place to be. And that is a function that's being fulfilled by the folks at Bamboo Detroit. And we have one of the co-founders of that organization with us, Dave Anderson. Dave, thank you very much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor.
Thanks for having me.
How's it going, Dave?
Pretty good, Emily. How are you?
Good, thanks.
So, Dave, I'm really interested in your official title for the company.
My official title actually is co-founder. co-founder.
Oh, I thought it was Strategic Sun.
Yeah, that's something that Amanda put on the website. One of my
oh, I see. Okay, so we've had your other one of the other co-founders, Amanda.
Amanda Lewan, yeah.
And she's now she's listed here as the community lady, which makes a whole lot of sense after meeting her. And then you have a product guy and an operational dude, eh?
Yeah, exactly. So my background's in engineering, so naturally I kind of strayed toward strategy.
I gotcha.
Okay.
So tell us about Bamboo.
So Bamboo is a co-working space located downtown that my partners and I opened to promote entrepreneurship in the city of Detroit. What a co-working space is essentially an office that people from different backgrounds and different industries work together in the same office. So as opposed to working for the same company, you just happen to be doing your own thing, something entrepreneurial related typically, but it might be a remote worker from a different corporate, you know, industry, all working in the same office together.
Now, somebody was saying that this is not an incubator, right?
It's not technically an incubator, but we often get confused as an incubator.
Yeah.
This is simply a place to rent a desk and work around other like-minded entrepreneurs.
Okay.
But isn't that one of the best parts, is that you work around other like-minded individuals that, you know, the water cooler conversations have got to be fascinating.
No, it really is. And, you know, I hear it all the time, you know, people that have left their corporate jobs, it's one of the things they really miss is the community or those water cooler conversations. And so this is kind of a way for those folks that are now on their own, you know, to continue to be involved in that community.
You know, I was involved in founding an innovation center, an incubator. And while we provided other kind of support and this and that and some formal help, one of the things that the tenants all thought was absolutely the best was the interaction with other tenants. And that's what you really offer.
Absolutely. You know, we find out all the time that community is just so important, you know, being able to be around other people. You know, when typically you're just getting off the ground, you're working out of a coffee shop, you know, which can be really distracting, or you're working from home.
Which could be even more distracting.
Yeah, or more distracting.
Or just lonely,
exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of times they come down to Bamboo just to get away. And being around those other entrepreneurs really helps grow their business.
Yeah, I'm wondering if Ainsley would fit in there, Emily.
Yeah, we work well from home. I don't know if we're ready for a co-working. But Dave, one thing with Bamboo is if you want to know what's happening in the Detroit startup community, just sign up for the Bamboo newsletter. I mean, I read it religiously, and Dave, you guys always have cool stuff going on. So, I mean, if there's anything that I missed in the last week, you had a busy week this last week.
Oh, we had an extremely busy week. So over the last week, we started this thing called Coworking Week. And what that is basically a way to just, you know, celebrate entrepreneurship, celebrate coworking, and highlight all the coworking spaces that are popping up in the city. And so we go and we visit each coworking space that's listed on collabdetroit.com. And we have an event. It might be a happy hour. It might be something educational. And so we had a really busy week doing that. At our space, we had a great panel with Bottle D where we talked about the culture of co-working. And then we ended it off yesterday with a startup ping pong tournament held at Drive Table Tennis Social Club downtown.
I love it.
So cool.
You know, it was great.
How come we don't have that here?
I'm amazed at some of your members, some of the people that hang out down there. I'd like a super business girl, Kidnapper. I think I pronounced that right. She's 10 years old.
Kidpreneur.
Yeah, Kidpreneur.
Oh, Kidpreneur.
Oh, wow. And she's 10 years old, and she's got her own company, and you guys support it.
Yeah, she actually just turned 11.
you got to update the website. Okay.
But she's formerly known as Detroit's youngest entrepreneur, and she sells candles with the help of her dad. But she's really up over this last year. And, you know, we've just been doing everything we can to support her. As her business grows, and really just turn her into a well-rounded, you know, not just entrepreneur, but person as well.
Dave, how long have you been at this with Bamboo?
So we opened officially last August, 2013. Mm-hmm. We've been working on the project since around last May or so. So it's been almost a year and a half.
So, how many members do you have now?
We're up to about 65 now, and that's changing every day. So we're growing.
And the breadth of these members, Social Sushi Detroit, you know, I got to try
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah.
And when I look at some of these other ones, the Athletics Ambassador Community and Healthy Detroit and Lucky Airlines, you know. Some of these are wonderful.
Lucky Airlines? What, you're lucky to get a ticket? What?
Yeah, you know, starting with Social Sushi, that was started by a good friend of mine, Jay Rayford. And it was, you know, just a traveling event that brought together great sushi and great people to network around different types of business topics. And it's just really grown over the last 2 years into now he's working on getting his own physical space in Corktown. And so he's going to be opening up an official Social Sushi bar where it's going to be out of a shipping container, of all things.
Oh, really?
And
I love it.
And yeah, it's going right outside of the train station, I hear. So
outside
really
the
cool.
The Verner station? You mean down on the southwest side?
Yeah, I don't know if all the details are set in stone yet, but
crazy.
That's the last I heard. And it was, I mean, it's just great to see, you know, people starting out in our space and then growing out of it into their own thing. And that's really our ultimate goal.
Endless Crowds is another one. You could get Endless Crowds associated with that event. And, you know,
exactly.
You know, these guys could all work together.
Yeah, exactly. Endless Crowds is a crowdfunding platform specifically for policemen and veterans and firefighters.
Oh, wow.
To raise money for different projects that they like to work on.
Fascinating. So if you go, by the way, folks, to bamboodetroit.com and click on members, you can see it's just absolutely fascinating, the different kind of businesses that are going on here. You know, Hodge Fleming, who was on just before, was talking about the need to expand beyond Midtown and to, mm-hmm. to create a bigger network. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's an absolute necessity, and I've had this conversation with plenty of folks, you know, not just downtown, but, you know, in the neighborhoods. And so we are actively pursuing, you know, partnerships with different neighborhood organizations, starting with the Brightmoor Alliance.
Mm.
So we're forming a partnership with the Brightmoor Alliance, and we're looking at potentially opening up other bamboo locations around the city to promote entrepreneurship everywhere. Okay.
Well, when you think about it, it's almost inevitable. There's so much coming into downtown and Midtown. There's not places to go. They're going to have to spread out.
Well, Dave, thank you very much for being founding son? I forget. co-founder.
Strategic son, yes.
Strategic son, the official co-founder, along with Amanda Lawan. We love her. We had a great time with her. Thank you for all you're doing for Detroit, and much success to you and the folks at Bamboo Detroit.
Keep it up, Dave.
Thank you for having me.
All right, take care. And Emily, so good to have you. And Ainsley, it's a new record, our youngest adventurer here on the Internet Advisor. So good to have you here.
And Emily, you always bring great guests with you, so thank you.
Well, thank you. You guys are the best.
That's Hey There Social Media. Look for the link on our homepage. Eddie, good to have you here. You and I are going to tackle some questions in the second hour.
Absolutely.
Get some answers for people. Gary, of course, always good to have you here.
It's wonderful to be here.
And for you folks out there, thank you so much. Look for our podcast at internetadvisor.net. And to our affiliates, we'll see you again soon.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast. Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, co-host of the program, along with Gary Baker and Ed Rudell today. We're going to be handling your questions. That's why we consider this probably the most important part of the program, because that's where we tackle the questions that you've sent us by email. And by the way, the way to do that is to simply go to our site, internetadvisor.net, hit the Contact Us button, put your problem in there, and then send it on its way to us. We'll do our very best to answer that. Coming up next. Well, once again, thank you for being with us here for the second hour of our program. That's one where we tackle the questions that you send to us by email. While we're preempted in our home station, WJR in Detroit, by MSU football,
as it happens to be right now, and some of the other sports as well, we still keep our lines of communication open with you so that you can call us, pardon me, you can get in touch with us by sending us an email. And you do that by going to internetadvisor.net, clicking on the Contact Us button, and there you can very simply put your question in there. Give us a little background, by the way, on the basis for the question, like, you know, what operating system you're using, whether it's a laptop or a desktop, that basic kind of things like that, and then ask your questions. And then people like Mr. Ed Rudell, who's in studio here, will tackle them. And you've been handling a lot this week, I saw.
Yeah, there were quite a few, and there were some good ones, because sometimes the people don't provide enough information, as you said. So it's really helpful if I know what version of Windows, if it's a laptop or desktop, that's very helpful.
Yep, and we got some great questions this week. By the way, we say this all the time, we really mean it. The only dumb question is the one you don't ask. Sometimes even the simplest questions that you ask are really great, because there's a lot of people out there who have those questions and they're kind of saying, oh, gee, I don't know. It's not very complicated, but it can be of a great help to a lot of people. We got one question today we'll get to in a little bit,
okay.
Which is really kind of neat. Like the guy says, how do I know how old my computer is?
Yeah, that was
a really great question, because often we have like secondhand computers or whatever. It helps to know.
And I never really thought about that either. And because sometimes I always do the same thing. When someone tells me that they have a computer, one of the first things I'll do, and I'll reveal it a little later, is look up what the age is.
Yep.
And that's interesting.
There's a sneaky way of doing it. Ed's got that. By the way, this week, Eddie, has been a week for updates for me. And kind of interesting. Have you, by the way, installed Windows 10 yet, that preview?
No. No, I haven't.
I hope you do, because it's a fascinating. It works really well. I'm talking, by the way, about the Windows 10 preview.
Yes.
Absolutely free.
Yep. And what you had done is you had installed the update on your existing Windows 8 system, right?
Right. Exactly.
Okay. And what I was thinking about doing, because I found a Windows Secrets, which is an excellent weekly article that I received.
Great magazine.
And they made it a description on how to download the update and put it on a flash drive and make a live flash drive or a live CD.
A bootable
flash drive that had the Windows operating system on there.
Very good.
So without me having to, you know, possibly ruin my existing system where I got it just the way I want it.
Yep.
And I don't want to have to deal with downgrading later on.
Although I have to say, Ed, that I put, you know, I'm using, thanks to the folks at Microsoft, I've been using this Surface Pro 2. And so I figured, hey, I'll just go for it. And I downloaded it on it. And I have found, a matter of fact, not only no problems, but a lot of benefits that come from the new Windows 10. And there have been a lot of improvements on it. Still some problems, but the idea behind Windows 10, folks, if you ever decide to download it, by the way, 1 million people have done that so far. And they say, you know, this is not for the faint of heart. And Ed, you're right. It probably would be wise if your machine is the only one you have and it's running Windows 8.1, which is the latest version of Windows 8, it probably would be best not to put it on there, although putting it onto a bootable thumb drive is a great idea. Running in a virtual machine would be another way of doing it.
Right.
So it doesn't, you know, clobber your whole machine. But in my case, I deliberately did it because I wanted to gamble on that, see how that worked. It has worked marvelously. Now, I said there's some things about Windows 10, and I hope, by the way, to do a program maybe in the next couple of weeks. We'll see if we can get some of the folks from Microsoft in to talk about it as well. Yeah. To talk about what I'm finding with it.
Yeah, have they ever come up with a release date besides, is it going to be in 2015?
2015, I think it is right now, yeah. Matter of fact, I'm running what's called the second build. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's not just updates. This is a complete rebuild, and so it doesn't look much different from the first Windows 10, but there are definitely some improvements in it, different things that they've tweaked in it. It's definitely beta. Matter of fact, they want to hear from you, and they have had 250,000 roughly responses of people writing in and saying things like I did, for instance, like you've got to get the toolbars better on this thing, because right now they're just this little ... you know, at the top corner. You've got to do a better job on that. So, but they're listening.
Yes.
And one of the things we've seen with the new Microsoft is they listen and they really do
I understand they're going to eliminate the charms too.
Yes. Yes.
Thank goodness.
Yeah,
they're practically useless. It just didn't take off. And to me, it's annoyance. Every time I swipe my touchpad or my glide mouse, every time I swipe from right to left when I'm just wanting to, you know, sometimes, you know, it's like moving your finger across the page when you're reading. Sometimes I do that with the mouse arrow when I'm reading an article.
Yeah, yeah.
I know it's completely ridiculous, but I do that. And sometimes when I'm swiping right to left, the damn charms comes up every single time and I want to disable it.
Well, the nice thing is that, you won't find that. The other thing too, by the way, if you're using Windows 8 right now, is that you know how you have to swipe in from the left in order to get the list of windows that are open? And then you have to pick one of those windows and you have to kind of cock it in order to...
You were describing that to me. It's quite a cumbersome process.
It's all gone. It's all gone now. So when you swipe in from the left, you get a thumbnail of all the windows that are open, and you can just click them and kill them at that point or switch to another one.
Sort of like Windows 7. That's good.
Exactly. They've gone back to some of the things that work really well in Windows 7 as well. Hey, folks, we're going to come back in just a moment, and when we do, we're going to start handling some of the questions that you've thrown at us this week here on the Internet Advisor. Thank you again for being here with us, and thanks to the folks behind the glass, as they say. Annie Nichols, our lady of the telephones, who is answering the phones right now and bringing some of our guests on. And Mike, thank you very much for being behind us, the engineer today. Lots of people helping us get this program on the road. And by the way, again, very quickly, if you have a question you would like to have answered, you can simply send us an email at internetadvisor.net. Go to the Contact Us button and put your question in there, as did one of our listeners who was with us right now. And welcome to Andre Massa. Andre, thank you very much for joining us here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Delighted to have you on with us. The question that you posed to us is kind of an interesting one. You said you're using Windows 7 for the past couple of weeks, and you have a message that appears on certain websites that says, "This page can't be displayed." Now, one of those websites is LinkedIn.com. I use LinkedIn myself as well. And it says, you can access the website with Google Chrome. And you think the problem may be due to a Windows update. So your question...
I've been using Windows 7 for a couple of years, but I noticed that probably after I had the last group of updates, maybe 10 or something, I get quite a few updates, and just I noticed that some websites... I couldn't get to.
Okay.
And I tried everything. I deleted some of the updates and it didn't help. So after a while, I started to just look at some of the settings. So I stumbled on. I went to the advanced settings on in the Explorer, and I checked SSL 2, 3. TLS 1.0, 1.1, and 1.2, and that fixed the problem.
God, that's interesting. So you found that, and Foster and I were just talking about this.
Yeah.
So basically, you had to enable all those different security encryption protocols in order for you to log into certain websites.
Yes.
And possibly a Microsoft update that was applied to your system disabled some of those backsliding or backwards compatible, or I mean not backwards compatible, older versions of SSL encryption. So that's interesting, because so none of my suggestions worked and you figured it out yourself. No, that's wonderful.
That's wonderful. Matter of fact, congratulations to you, because you've helped a number of other people who may be having the same kind of problem. I would have guessed immediately, Ed, when Andre told us this, that it was a virus that had hijacked the toolbar, but it wasn't.
I would have thought that. I would have thought it would have been pop-ups.
Yep.
Maybe you have to re-enable pop-ups. And
I know that I don't go to too many websites, and I suspected one of the settings, but I didn't know what I had, what my settings were before. And
right,
I
was
reluctant to change anything, but it was just irritating me to a point.
Oh,
where
certainly.
I'm going to try
Andre,
go back to what I had before if it didn't work.
Yeah, because I think one of the other things I suggested is possibly using, making sure Java was loaded properly. Do you recall what I said on the email to possibly try?
I did not receive the email.
Really?
Oh.
Oh, my goodness. I apologize for that.
Well, but
I'm glad you figured it out yourself. And for those listeners that don't know, you have the different secure advanced features in Internet Explorer. You have TLS, which is a more modern version of whenever you go to a site that says HTTPS, it's right. A secured site.
Right.
It uses the TLS encryption to between your workstation or your PC and that website to encrypt the data between the two sites.
Right.
And it also encrypts your password and username.
Right.
And when Andre was selected SSL3, SSL2, SSL1, what he was doing was enabling older versions of the encryption because possibly the website he was going to was having difficulties with the newer versions.
Now, Andre, where did you find those settings for the rest of the listeners? Where did you go to find that?
I went to the Internet Options, Advanced Settings.
Okay, now this is on Internet Explorer?
Yes.
Okay. And so you went into the Advanced Settings on that,
mm-hmm.
and then where did you go in there?
And it's listed a whole bunch of these.
Yeah, it's under the security section.
Okay.
Yes, under the security section, they were already listed. They were not checked.
Okay, that's it. Okay,
okay,
very good.
Now, the one thing I want to make sure is that you have good antivirus software on there and that you've scanned your computer for malicious software using a software that we recommend called Malwarebytes. So have you scanned your computer for viruses recently, or are you sure
I
you have?
I use a McAfee, and I scan him regularly.
Okay, that's good. I would recommend downloading and installing the Malwarebytes to scan.
It won't compete with McAfee, by the way.
Yeah,
it's, okay. It's not an antivirus program.
Now, when you install it, it's going to ask, do you wish to enable the last page during the setup process? Is do you wish to enable the 30-day trial? That's up to you, because it's going to nag you in 25 days. Do you wish to purchase this for $30 or $25? I always unselect it because Malwarebytes is not a real-time protection program.
Right.
I don't use it. I use it. I mean, I wish I
you
purchased
could.
It. You
if,
could.
I think if you purchase it, it becomes a real-time if you want to do that.
Right. But if you want to do a one-time scan and forget about it, use Malwarebytes to scan your computer, and then the next time when you exit the program, it's not running in the background anymore.
Right,
it's not trying to provide real-time protection. And
okay.
It'll scan for software that McAfee will not find. And the reason why I want to give you that caution is something that came up in the news 2 weeks ago called Poodle. Which is exactly what you're describing. I don't think, or I have not read, that there is a live or a real version of a virus that takes advantage of Poodle. But what Poodle is
not just a dog.
Yeah. No, it is not. What it is basically, it's been in the news the last couple of weeks, and it is a vulnerability within SSL 3, 2, and 1.
Which are, by the way, the older security settings.
Correct. And TLS, which is the more modern version,
right.
TLS 2 and TLS 1, have been around for about 10 years. And all web browsers should use that as the preferred encryption between your PC and the website. What the Poodle virus does is it disables those or forces the PC to use SSL 3 or SSL 2, which is what yours is, and you found those, because those SSL 3 and SSL 2, those can be hacked. You know,
right,
they've been around long enough where people can actually, giving a little time, discern usernames, passwords, and the type of information that's being transmitted between the host and the client.
So bottom line here is that these are security settings, folks, that Andre wisely was able to find, and congratulations to you, Andre, on doing that.
And he enabled those because more than likely there may have been a Microsoft update that disabled those for Internet Explorer so that Microsoft would not be susceptible to this
Poodle. Particular exploit.
Right.
So congratulations on that. We should have some sort of a prize that we would send you for this.
thank you for the congratulations, and thanks for the help.
Oh, yes. And you have now helped a lot of other people as well, and this is why we enjoy having people like yourself on who have we've often worked with, but who themselves have been able to kind of suss this type of thing out. Have you been using computers for a long time?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's quite a long time, but I don't use it for games and things like that. Just use it to use it.
No, that's quite all right.
We all develop our rituals. Check your email.
Yep.
Check your favorite news sites. I go to Imgur and look at funny images of the day's posting. I showed one today of Foster, and we'll talk about it a little later, about USB flash drives now shipping in the mail as paper. And they're actually part of the tear-off on the envelope.
Yeah. Andre, I want to just thank you very much again for being bold enough to take that kind of a step and also for sharing it with us here on the Internet Advisor. Thanks so much, Andre.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. That's excellent. A great way that a listener helps a lot of other ones. And you've got to talk about that USB. We'll do that when we come back. Folks, this is fascinating. It's actually a USB drive that has been printed onto the side of a package. You've got to hear the story, and we'll also put the link to it on our program as well, on our website. You're listening to the Internet Advisor. My name is Foster Brown. Ed Rudell is in the house here helping to solve some questions, and we've got some more coming up that you presented to us this week, and we'll be talking with some other listeners as well. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, hour number two, Foster Brown and Ed Rudell in studio here handling your questions, and thank you so much for sending them in to us. We faithfully take a look at those, and each one of the guys, with their particular expertise, take a crack at answering them. Ed Rudell, very often, is the person who is answering the questions recently. And Eddie, you had something that you saw today, and we'll try to post this as well, folks, on the site, that is absolutely fascinating. And that was new way of delivering a USB drive.
You know, leave it to the marketing people. Really? I mean, so you get a mailer in there, but what I saw was basically a paper flash drive, USB flash drive. And, imagine if when you look into a USB flash drive, how it has the metal shell and silver edge. Yep. Imagine a flash drive without that.
Okay, so just get the guts.
You just get the guts of it. And what they're doing is it's about 3/8 of an inch wide, and think of your paycheck and how you have the tear off tabs in your paycheck, mm-hmm. and you have to rip three sides of it to find the gold glory of the minimum paycheck you got. Okay, well, think of a mailer where you receive, and it's like a cardboard version of that,
yeah.
and the bottom tab is actually cardboard that you tear off, but embedded in there you'll find four copper strips that if you bend and tear off, you can insert the copper strips into your computer, and it's a USB flash drive that loads a program.
Absolutely.
Advertisers are using for this, but colleges are using it for applications. You know, business schools are using it as well. So I saw this picture on Imgur, and I had to do some little research on it, and I'm like, leave it to the marketing people to think of stuff like that.
Literally, folks, you tear this off of the package, and then they give you instructions on how to fold it just right so that you can then insert this thing into one of your USB ports on your computer, and it has a form in there, I think.
It has a little program that brings up a form, and it may automatically take you to a website or, if it's a college application or whatever. What a wonderful idea.
Incredible, isn't it? Absolutely incredible. This week, by the way, I've been fascinated with some things in science, and one of the things, and we're trying to get these people on. There is a guy who has developed a hovercraft. And it's based on magnetic. Now, there's a hoax out there called Hover, H-U-V-R.
Yeah.
And it purports to have this hovercraft, and people are flying around all over the place.
Yeah, no.
It's a hoax.
You know, I
this
had one of those.
Isn't.
I had a, what is it, a Popular Mechanics that showed me how to make one of those out of a vacuum cleaner.
Apparently, that one was like a stunt for Back to the Future 4. It's coming out.
Yes.
But this is a real. The guy has created a vehicle, a little one. It's like a prototype.
Yes.
That can hover magnetically. It hovers about 3/4 inch off of a metal surface. Now, I can only do it on a metal surface right now.
I was
going to
say it's a metal surface.
But it's a proof of concept. Concept, yes. And he ships out this white box to people so that they can, and he's not giving it away, but he's saying, here, take this and try to adapt it in your particular technology, which I think is wonderful. Anyway, we're trying very hard to get him on because it is absolutely fascinating. Well, we have another one of our listeners with us right now, and that is Linda. Linda, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hi, I'm glad to be able to talk with you.
Thank you so much for being with us. And you had a question about a new Windows 8 computer, I understand.
Yes, it's really giving me fits.
It's giving you fits. fits. All right. Well, tell us what one of the fits is, at least, and we'll see if we can help you.
Well, I actually figured this one out. What I had written to you about was installing the Avast from a thumb drive. And, you know, I was really afraid to even plug the thumb drive in because I didn't know what would happen on Windows 8. I didn't know where to look for it.
I know what you mean. Yes, yes, it is hard with Windows 8 to know exactly where it's going to show up.
So I'm anxious for any hints you can give me about how to make the whole process of going to my computer and finding the programs that I'm looking for.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about is you're looking for the old File Explorer.
I am.
And that does exist. Now, Eddie, you're using Windows 8.1, am I right?
Yes, but not on the computer I have in front of me
okay.
right now.
I'm using Windows 10, but I mean, I think it's the same thing. If you right-click, you know on the bottom left-hand side of your screen, there's like a window down there?
Yeah.
I think if you right-click on that, at least in Windows 10, I believe it's the same
thing.
You will. File Explorer. And you click on that File Explorer, and it will pop up then something that you'll recognize a lot better, which is it shows you your home, your favorites, this PC, and then it also shows you the devices that you have plugged in. Like, for instance, I have a small SD card. Help me, Ed.
Okay.
One of those little cards, little memory cards.
Yes.
In other words, I have that plugged in, and it's showing here. That's where your thumb drive would show up.
Right.
That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's interesting. So what you had done is you had downloaded it from another computer and copied Avast onto the thumb drives with the intention of installing on Windows 8.
And then the problem she was having, and by the way, folks, this is for if you're using Windows 8, this is a confusing thing because this is one of the problems that Microsoft has. If you've been using Windows 7, for instance, you'd look for the File Explorer.
Yes.
You know, you click on that and you would get the tree, in essence, that shows you where different things are.
Yep. And unfortunately, Windows 8.1, which was optimized for tablets, completely left behind laptop users. We'll adopt this for our laptops. And they completely abandoned an entire generation of users. Thus, Windows 10 is going to be coming
out. Yeah, they're doing better. Like, as I said, I just went in Windows 10 down to that bottom left-hand corner, and I think Linda, you did the same thing there. And when you right-click on it, then the file manager comes up, and you can see then where that thumb drive is. Not so you were able to find it though.
Yes.
Good.
And when I put the thumb drive in, I could see that.
Yep.
I don't remember now exactly how I saw it, but I finally got the guts to plug it in.
Oh, excellent.
I did find it. But this is exactly what I was looking for.
Good. Another thing,
Windows, I believe you can also hit the Windows key and the X key, which also brings up the similar menu. Isn't that correct, Foster?
Yes, Windows X.
Windows X.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. That is a shortcut. You're very good, Ed. I hadn't forgotten that. There's a whole series, and we posted this at one time.
Yeah. And
there's a whole series of shortcuts.
Yeah, and for some reason, I just think of XP, because everyone loved XP, which is now gone, and this is my remembrance to Windows XP is Windows X. You know, so
yeah.
That's my shortcut key.
That's
a
good way to remember it. Okay, great. Yes,
another thing to do would be to see if you can find that web page. We'll try to find it.
All the shortcuts?
There. With all the shortcuts on it.
Yeah.
It's a great page, and essentially you can, you know, get rid of a lot of these moves with these very simple, as Ed said, hitting the Windows key and then something else will do all sorts of things. It brings the charms up.
One of the things I use all the time is Windows L. In my work environment, Windows L locks my computer every time I step away from the computer. So instead of me doing Control-Alt-Delete and hitting lock, I hit Windows L. So was there a second question that you had I thought you said you figured this one out.
I figured this one out, but what I'm really looking for is those kind of hints. If there's information available on how to make Windows 8 work for you.
Yep.
That's a very good point.
And what I was thinking of is the Paul Throttle website.
Oh, yes, super site for Windows, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that was it. And he has so much great information. Foster's going to look it up. So much great information on Windows 8, and for all those people that feel abandoned, that were on Windows 7 or Windows XP and jumped onto Windows 8, and they're like, now what do I do?
Exactly. You know, we turned on the computer and looked at it, and said, okay, now what?
Yes. Yeah, now what do I do?
And what a lot of people have decided to do is to install a Windows shell. So that makes it look like Windows 7. And there are a couple free programs out there.
Yeah.
One of them is called, was it Classic Shell?
Yes.
Which allows you to, it basically makes it look just like Windows 7.
That's called Classic Shell, you
Classic
said?
Shell, yes.
Okay.
And there's another program, and I cannot recall it right now. The cautionary note on that is that if you do not already have Windows 8.1, as an example, which was a major Microsoft release, and you'll be notified by your Windows Play Store that Microsoft has a major update to upgrade you from Windows 8 to 8.1.
You really should do that, but yeah, have you done that yet, Linda?
You should do that first, before you do the Classic Shell, because if the Classic Shell is installed and you put 8.1 on there, it disables the Classic Shell.
Yeah.
You know, so
very good point, Ed. Yeah. Now, Linda, do you know if you've upgraded to Windows 8.1?
How would I know?
It would be in your updates. It would be in your updates, and you can find that out by going down to the to the charms on the right hand side, and it says PC settings. Go ahead.
Well, one of the things you can do is if you hit your Windows key will toggle you back and forth between the Windows 8 shell and what looks like a Windows desktop shell. So when you press your Windows key, it should do that. And then one of the things you could do is when you're into the Windows desktop shell, when you right mouse click on your start button on the left-hand side, or what passes as a start button, you'll see a whole bunch of options that pop up.
Linda, I want you to hang on for a second, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, because I want to come back and I want to give you a few more tips on Windows 8, because I think it's going to help a lot of other people as well. You're listening to The Internet Advisor with Ed Riddell, Foster Brown here, answering your questions in this hour number two. Thank you so much for being with us here on the Internet Advisor this week, and delighted to be able to bring you our guests. And also, this part of our program, we've been answering questions from you folks out there. Matter of fact, one of you folks out there is still with us, and that's Linda. Thank you, Linda, for giving us a call here and for letting us step in and answer some of the questions and find out how you answered some of your questions as well. I wanted you to hang on, Linda, for just a little bit longer, because there are a couple of things I wanted to tell you about Windows 8. And one of them was, the question you asked was, how do I know what version of Windows 8 I have, right?
Yep, and I gave her some obscure method, and I thought of another one as soon as I found myself fumbling to describe the other one.
Okay, and then let's just kind of go through this quickly with you. If you go, for instance, now, I'm going to erase my steps here and do them for you, kind of basic. If you go to that bottom left-hand side, and you right-click, and you go to File Explorer, okay?
Right.
Under File Explorer, you'll see that there's one that's called This PC. It used to be called My Computer, but it's called This PC. When you right-click
that's
on that...
That's what happened to my computer.
Yes, yes. Isn't that wonderful that they just renamed it something else?
You know, that's what happens. You get a generation, and they start, they think they know everything, and they change everything.
They made so many problems for themselves they didn't need. So you click on this PC, you go to the very bottom, and it says Properties. And you click on that, and what happens then is it comes up and it tells you what the Windows edition is that you're running.
Okay.
And it's
I see that I have a screen. I went to Control Panel.
Oh, okay.
And I see that I have a screen that says Windows 8, and then it says Windows 8.1 with Bing.
Well, great. You're done. You got it. You have Windows 8.1. I thought that there was an automatic upgrade,
Yeah, I think there was. And what I was thinking of is 8.1 could have been pulled down from the Microsoft Play Store if you wanted to get it early.
Yeah, you could have gone to that way. Yeah, earlier.
And even when we first just turned it on, I know it was doing all kinds of things that, of course,
it was doing a lot of upgrading at that point in time as well. Yes, exactly. Now, by the way, how long have you had your Windows 8 machine?
We just set it up last weekend.
Oh, okay. So you're pretty new to the thing. Well, I want to recommend Paul Thurrott's website. It's called winsupersite.com. And that's WINSUPERSITE, winsupersite.com. Paul Thurrott is probably one of the best analysts of Windows. And he, by the way, he's not a fanboy. He will tell you when something is wrong there as well. And he does a weekly show with Leo Laporte.
And
okay. I recognize his name from your show.
Yep, exactly. And Leo does a great show. Every week he does one on, it's called Windows Weekly. And there are two experts on there, Mary Beth and Paul Thurrott, who does his section. But anyway, Paul's got a great site. And on there, you will find things like tips on, you know, how to use shortcuts on Windows. Anyway, it's a great resource for anyone who's getting used to Windows 8.
Okay, thank you very much.
Even if you want to dare to go to Windows 10 preview, which I have done, but in any case, you don't have to necessarily do that. He's got a ton of stuff for Windows 8.1 and all sorts of tips and tricks in there, so it's a great place to go. And the other thing you can do is just simply Google for Windows 8.1 shortcuts, and you'll find articles that have plenty of things on that, too. Okay?
Thank you. Is Windows 10 available now, or is that still in the...
Well, it is, and I will just give you this...
It's
a preview.
Pre-beta. I think it's an alpha.
It's beta. Oh,
yeah.
It's
not even beta. It's alpha.
Well, what they tell you is this, and you have to be warned that it is definitely a beta. In other words, there are bugs in it. No questions about it. And they want feedback on what those bugs are. So if you're inclined to put Windows 10 on and put up with a lot of that stuff, then you're okay.
But for a home user, I wouldn't recommend it because you're going to have to uninstall it at some point in the future. You may not be able to upgrade to a full version.
There's a question about that.
Yes.
There's a question about whether, in other words, because they're constantly tweaking it. Like I said, I'm build 2 right now.
Okay.
And there's a question that they may just run this right in and float it in, and you won't have to do the uninstall. But that's neither here nor there.
I don't want to be on the bleeding edge of
No,
that.
There you go. So that's what I thought.
Where we are.
So there are places around that will help you to make your Windows 8.1 experience much better, okay?
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for calling us, Linda, and thank you all out there for the questions that you have put into us this week. Hey, Ed, let's handle one more from our friend John Humphrey, a friend of mine, who called this week, or rather emailed this week, and had some questions about his computer. Two questions, and one was that he was having a problem with the Windows update, and he was finding all sorts of error codes. Now, you had some thoughts about that for people who are running into that.
Well, first, write down the error codes, and then when you get the error codes, if an update's failed, you'll get a notification on the right-hand side telling you that a Windows update has failed. Click here for more information. Then it'll ask you, it'll provide a link with the KB or the update name, so the
knowledge base.
Right. So you might want to make a write that note down, what that is, and then it'll have like an error code next to it. Jot that error code down. But the important thing is that there's usually a details or a button that you can, or a link that you can press where it goes out to Microsoft's website and says, and then it'll look up that error code for you. And if Microsoft has a solution to it, it'll provide you, these are the steps that you should take to fix this error.
Are there sometimes, though, when it fails because maybe it doesn't apply to your machine?
No, if it's downloaded to your machine, these security updates apply to the operating system.
Okay, the security updates are different.
Not necessarily to your computer.
Gotcha.
But I have had several instances where these things just fail. So here's some of the tricks I do. First, I do a scan disk on your computer, or check your disk for errors. That takes around 45 minutes. Then I will empty my temporary internet files.
Okay.
And then empty my Windows temp folder.
Now, can you CCleaner for something like that?
I've used CCleaner, which is on the InternetAdvisor.net website under the toolkit.
That's free.
It's free, and it'll clean up your temporary internet files and temp files and log files. The other thing that, if that fails, I next go to a more drastic solution is under Windows, there is a folder called Software Distributions.
Software Distributions,
and,
right.
And it's under Windows, Software Distributions. That's where all your updates are downloaded to. So imagine that your computer may have went to sleep in the middle of a download of these security updates, or you did a Windows shutdown and Microsoft was downloading those security updates at that time. One of those files may have become corrupted. So one of the things you can do is... you can go to Microsoft's website and just type in that knowledge base number and say, how do I download this Windows update that's failing? I just want to download this update manually and then run it myself. I don't want to run it, you know, using Windows updates. Mm-hmm. I want to download it and execute it and try to install it.
Okay.
That's the first thing I would do after I check for disk errors and empty temporary internet files, is I'll try to download it directly from Microsoft and try to run it separately. If that fails, then, you know, where are we going to go from there? I've deleted the contents of my software distributions. Microsoft
You can rename it, can't you?
You can rename it.
There you
go. There are some
like
steps to that.
Software distribution, yeah. Or old.
And how I've done that is you power up your computer, you tap F8 or the function 8 key, and you come up in safe mode. That'll
right.
allow me to rename that folder. And when you come up, you can reboot your computer back in normal mode, Microsoft will recreate that folder again for you.
I got you. Okay. So that's one of the ways of handling, kind of sneaky ways around it. Hey, folks, we want to thank you very much for your questions. We'll try to get to more of these this coming week as well. And we look forward. Matter of fact, a very special program coming up this next week. It will be about the cybersecurity events that's going to be happening very soon in Michigan. Ed Riddell, thank you so much. And thank you all for participating here.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisors Show, the longest running, locally produced computer show in Detroit Radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit internetadvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.